You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 203. Today's episode is all about a local business owner. The last show was things to do in the spring of 2024. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. But before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum, located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. Through May 10th, 2024, you can check out their exhibit titled The Mystic Brotherhood, Fraternal Orders of New Orleans. For centuries, Freemasons, Odd Fellows, and other similar fraternal organizations have contributed to the network of benevolent and mutual aid societies that cradle New Orleans' social, cultural, and civic life. Through objects and images drawn from their collection, the new exhibition explores the sometimes hidden history of these organizations and illuminates how they help shape today's city. Additionally, their permanent exhibit on the French Quarter life is an immersive experience worth a visit. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is free. Go check them out at hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. Next up is Accidental Cajun Photography. It's been said a picture says a thousand words, and it's true. A good picture should tell a powerful story. James Cullen of Accidental Cajun Photography has been using his camera to tell stories in New Orleans for over a decade, and now he wants to tell your story. Whether you're in town for a quick weekend getaway and want a professionally shot portrait session, or planning an elopement or a wedding, or want fun family photos, Accidental Cajun Photography customizes each shoot to fit your needs. James also offers photography experiences where he is your personal paparazzi and concierge for the day as you experience the most interesting aspects of New Orleans culture. To inquire about bookings and packages, email at James at accidentalcajun@gmail.com. Don't just make memories, but keep them. Now on to today's topic. One of the things I really like to do at the podcast is highlight businesses I think you would enjoy that also have owners who seem to do the right thing. My guest today is one of those. Robert LeBlanc is the founder of LeBlanc & Smith, a hospitality company whose offerings include, in part, Barrel Proof, Mobar, Barracuda, The Chloe, Anna's, The Will & The Way, and Sylvain. I may have even missed a couple, and we'll get into that. Robert, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good.
Excited to be here with you.
I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of the properties.
Thank you.
I hang out at some of them more than others, particularly Barrel Proof. I heard you speak at NOE, an entrepreneur conference last year, and it really impressed me that you talked about the way that you do your business. And so I want to get into that. But first, let's talk a little bit about you. Where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in Houma, Louisiana,
okay.
50 miles southwest of here in New Orleans. My mom and dad were both born and raised in New Orleans, so I had an interesting upbringing in that. We came here for most holidays and occasions, so I spent a tremendous amount of time here growing up as a child. But I also grew up in Houma, which is a more, I wouldn't say country, but it's a more rural environment. And so, you know, in Houma, there's not as much to do in the way of concerts and ball
sure.
games and things like that. And so I think people in Houma naturally become interesting and entertainers, and and you know, hospitality flows even more freely in Houma, I think, than it does here in New Orleans, because you truly, you entertain each other, and there's so many amazing people down there. So, but then you come to New Orleans and you get this worldly sense of culture, and it was a really magical way to grow up, and
yeah.
I think it's absolutely informed who I am today.
That's pretty cool to have both sides. And we know several people from Houma, and I would agree with your characterization of that. Seem to be outgoing people, enjoy life. And there's a lot of culture there, too. It's just different than New
Tons
Orleans.
Tons of culture, but the culture is driven by the food
yeah.
and by experiences, intimate experiences with people, fishing trips, cooking
right.
for someone, having people over at your house, as opposed to 70,000 of your closest friends in
the
Superdome of the Saints game or the Taylor Swift concert.
Fair enough. Yeah, Taylor Swift. I have two 12-year-old daughters, so I'm hearing a lot about Taylor Swift these days. So how did you first get interested in hospitality? Did it really come from that, or was it just growing up?
It was one of these stories in life where you know, your life's like a flowing body of water. You know the general direction, but you don't know exactly where it's going to end up. We started professionally with a record label. I went to school at Loyola
right.
University in New Orleans, and it's got a great music program. And most of our friends from freshman year were musicians, or many of them were. And as we were getting older, they asked us to manage the band, and that became a record label. And we were not very good at producing and selling records. The bands were awesome. We were not great as label owners. But we learned in that process how to brand things, how to market, how to produce concerts and events. And we had bartending jobs at the same time. It was one of these things where my partner and I were working on the business during the day and bartending at night. And that was always fun. And I always enjoyed that. And I always enjoyed the interactions that happen with people in restaurants or bars. You could see the camaraderie that happens. And people come in and they meet each other for the first time. And some of those people end up in a romantic partnership. A lot of times people end up as close friends as a result of that. And so that's always been something that's really powerful. But I think as we build this company, exploring where it comes from in terms of my heart and soul, I think it comes from both of my families. The reason why the company's named LeBlanc and Smith, LeBlanc is obviously my family name, and Smith is my mom's maiden name. And we used to come to New Orleans from Houma for holidays, and we'd go to the LeBlanc house, and LeBlancs were a long line of architects, engineers, and builders. My grandmother was an amazing cook. They were welcoming, and it was always a lot of people at the LeBlanc house also, but it was a really big family, and most of it was aunts, uncles, and first cousins. My grandfather would make Sazeracs for us before dinner, and it was, or lunch, and it was fantastic. My grandmother was an amazing cook, and my aunts have carried on that legacy. And their home was incredibly nice. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it was lavish or incredibly fancy or expensive, but it was just beautifully appointed with all of these found objects and art that my grandparents had collected over their travels. And they just had an immaculate way of making things seem beautiful. We would listen to classical music. And so I feel like all the things that we want people to experience viscerally in our places really struck me at a young age and all the way through my adulthood by the experiences that I had at the LeBlanc house. And so the second half of the day we would spend at the Smith house or vice versa. And the Smith family started here. My great-great-grandfather was an orphan from County Cavan, Ireland. He immigrated here as an eight-year-old to be a sailmaker on the docks of the Mississippi River, and he started a stevedore company here that became successful, but he stayed in the same neighborhood that he first landed in when he got to New Orleans. And when you went to the Smith family house, it wasn't just aunts and uncles and first cousins. It was second and third cousins, and it wasn't just family, it was neighbors who didn't necessarily have a place to go for the holidays. And it wasn't just neighbors, it was neighbors' cousins, and basically anybody who couldn't get back home if they weren't from New Orleans, or anybody who was close to the family came over. And it's where we really learned that family is defined not just by bloodlines, but it's about how you love people. And the other thing that I remember about the Smith household, I don't remember what we ate or drank ever. I'm not saying it was bad, but I do remember that you'd be there for 3 or 4 hours and it felt like 30 minutes, and the soundtrack of the whole thing was laughter. And so I think everything we want people to experience emotionally are things that really resonated with me through my experiences at the Smith house. You know, family is not just defined by bloodlines. It's the people you love. Everybody should be made to feel welcome. The soundtrack to any great gathering should be laughter primarily. And that's how we want people to feel. And I think that's where the name LeBlanc Smith comes from. It's the things that you experience viscerally, the things that you see, that you taste, that you hear. And that's not to say the LeBlancs weren't incredibly hospitable. They were. But I just remember very loudly being moved by the drinks my grandfather made, the food my grandmother made, their home, the things that we listened to, all those visceral experiences that we want you to experience in our places today. And then the way that we want people to feel, everyone should feel welcome. Everyone should feel completely at home. Everyone should feel like family. And the soundtrack should be laughter. Those visceral those emotional things came from the Smith side of my upbringing.
That's cool. And it certainly comes across, never having heard that story before, but visiting the properties, they all do have that feel to them. Very curated is almost the wrong word, but sort of. Like there's an intentionality there,
I would say. We talk about what our real goal is to create these magical guest experiences. We're heavily influenced by the Maya Angelou quote. People will forget what you said, they'll forget what you did, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. So we've always been really clear that we wanted the experience, the memory, the relationship to be the primary thing. And the food had to be really good, and the drinks had to be really good, and the design and the music and the atmosphere, all those things need to be really good to great, if not excellent. But those are all just objects that we use to create the subject, which is the guest experience and our relationship with the guest.
Sure. And I kind of want to get through, and you have like you have a big portfolio now of offerings. I think I'd like to start with the one that I spend the most time in, and that's Barrel Proof.
I love that.
Barrel Proof captures a lot of what you're saying. I mean, obviously, maybe not obviously for other people, it's a destination whiskey bar. In my mind, the preeminent bar in the city when it comes to bourbon and whiskey.
Thank you.
But what you get besides great whiskey is you get really a great space and really knowledgeable bartenders there. Continually impressed with the knowledge and the friendliness and the... It's just an elevated experience, truthfully.
Thank you.
How did Barrel Proof come to be?
So our partners, Patrick Finney and Michael Wilkinson, bought the old Bridge Lounge. The Bridge Lounge was an iconic bar in New Orleans, and frankly, it took a lot of courage, and we got a lot of flack for changing the Bridge Lounge. But I'm not sure if you remember, but there was a construction project on the corner of Magazine right outside of Bridge Lounge. It was literally a hole on Magazine Street. You couldn't get there. And the owners of the building and the bar had children and wanted to sell the business. They asked us to partner with them. And we wanted to do something that would be refreshing and new, but that would still honor the heritage of the Bridge Lounge, which meant so much to so many people. And one of the things I think made the Bridge Lounge incredible, one of the reasons we loved it, was because you could go, you could get a great glass of wine, you could get a cocktail, and it just didn't feel pretentious. It felt just like a great neighborhood bar. And, and at the time, ordering a good glass of wine in a bar, ordering a cocktail was really intimidating. And they took that intimidation factor away. And so... we wanted to honor that, but we wanted to create a place that was truly for the neighborhood, but we also wanted a place that offered excellent and a broad range of whiskeys, excellent cocktails, but without any pretense. So depending on your lens, we wanted you to be able to walk into Barrel Proof before or after going on a date or for a business meeting and have a really nice, refined experience over a cocktail, or we wanted you to roll in with a group of friends from the neighborhood and have a shot of whiskey and a high life and feel completely at home doing that. And this idea of making places comfortable for everyone, that's what makes it interesting. It makes the experience interesting. People get bored no matter how much they love their friends, but you get bored if you constantly go to the same places and the only people you see are people just like you. And it was really important to us to create this stickiness and to make it be this lobby for the Lower Garden District neighborhood, which at the time was transitional at best, but it was pretty
sleepy, rough.
And tough.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you call it a living room for the neighborhood, because it feels that way. It doesn't feel like a dive bar, but it doesn't feel like a swanky bar either. It feels very comfortable, so neighborhood really fits that. And then you guys do the pop-up thing at Christmas, so that's always crazy, where it becomes like this little winter wonderland, and there's drinks in Santa cups and things like that. But throughout most of the year, again, it's dive bar is the wrong word. It's not swanky. It fits somewhere in between there, just a really neighborhood comfortable spot. If you go in regularly, they know who you are, and you do see regulars, but you also see a mix of new people coming in, just as you described.
No, I appreciate that. And look, there are times that Liam and I go, and it is a dive bar to Liam and I, and there are also times that I go with my wife, Danielle, and it's a cocktail bar.
Right.
So we wanted to take a lot of the assumptions people have about dive bars or neighborhood bars. People typically think they have a ceiling on what they can offer in terms of product quality.
Right.
And we also wanted to blow the lid off this idea that if you were doing cocktails or if you were doing extensive whiskeys, it has to be delicate, precious, and snooty, because that's not true either.
Right.
Cocktails were always intended to be fun, and so we want to make sure we're honoring
yeah.
that.
And so for people listening, it's really interesting there. You can get super high-end bourbons and whiskeys there, and you can also get the household fashion, which I think these days is made with Jim Beam. For a long time was made with old granddad. Shows you how much I go there. But really good, well-made cocktail on either end of the spectrum. You know, and so you really can go in for $10 and have a drink and a nice time, or you can go spend as much as you want and really try high-end curated spirits.
That's, I appreciate you saying that. That's one of the things I'm most proud of with Barrel Proof. You can get expensive Pabby Van Winkle things that are really rare there as well, but you don't have to spend a lot of money to taste a bunch of different good whiskeys there. And I'm excited about that, because these experiences should be democratic. They should be available to everyone. It shouldn't be.
Yeah. And you see people go in and talk to the bartender, and the bartender might say, well, what's your budget? How much do you want to spend? Or what are you interested in? Or how much do you know? And then come out with a flight of pours that fits that, right? And the offerings are big enough there, wide enough there, that you can do that.
I appreciate you saying that. That's
my experience.
One of the things
of
which I'm most proud.
I could spend the whole time talking about Barrel Proof, but we won't, for those people who are not interested in drinking. Which property should we go to next?
So Sylvain was the first property, and Sylvain was the first place I think that maybe proved this theory that we had, that you could do things that were considered excellent from a product standpoint, be that design, food, cocktails, but you could present it in a way that is casual and fun and makes it feel approachable to all people so no one feels intimidated. When we opened Sylvain in 2010, that was the time that white tablecloth restaurants were really starting to explode. Cocktail bars were really starting to explode. The idea of buying good wines in restaurants started to explode, and all those things could be really intimidating. And it's a very personal experience for me because, you know, in my 20s, I loved great drinks. I loved great food, and I appreciated good wine, but I always felt intimidated. I felt like I didn't know enough or I didn't make enough money to be able to afford that experience. And so it just felt like it was this experience for others that I just, there was some barrier, whether it was financial or acumen, that I had not yet achieved. And we wanted Sylvain to be a place that shattered that perception of that barrier. And so like that was the first place. We talk about barrel proof being a come as you are place. You can get a beer and a shot, you can get a great cocktail or a great glass of wine. Sylvain really is the foundation of that ethos. And Liam, my business partner at Barrel Proof and at Anna's and Will on the Way and Barrel Proof Nashville, he was a bar manager at Sylvain. So he helped us create that spirit and that ethos. And Sylvain, I would say, is the bedrock. It was also, we opened that in 2010, and there wasn't a lot yet going on in the French Quarter for locals to just pop in casually.
Right.
All the Grand Dame restaurants were kicking, and those are great restaurants,
right?
But a lot of times that's occasional. You can't, you know, it's not a last minute place. You kind of, you need a reservation. You probably need to be addressed appropriately. So we felt like we needed a spot for locals in the quarter where you could pop in unannounced and you didn't have to be prepped per se,
right?
But you didn't have to compromise the quality of the food, the drinks, or the experience by doing so.
Right. Yeah, it really fits that too. It very much, I hadn't thought of that as like a locals place, but it is a locals place.
Yeah.
People know it, and it's not snooty and it's not pretentious, and but you can get a really nice drink there. You can get really good food there. It's a nice space, all those things.
And I'm really proud of that. That was a place, you know, because that, you know, Danielle and I had not yet had our first child, so we were still going out eating and drinking again. And before that, we went to the quarter and had amazing experiences, but only occasionally. We didn't go once a week, and that was when we started seeing people start to consider going to the French Quarter once a week, and then all kinds of great things have developed in the French Quarter since then.
Yeah.
And, you know, Charters is incredible. I think a little bit of bias because Sylvain's on it, but I feel like Charters is probably the best. That six block stretch is probably the most dense, great dining.
You got lots of great options
in absolutely.
There. Yeah, so kind of we'll stay in the French Quarter then. How about Will in the Way? And talk a little bit about its predecessor and how it came to be Will in the Way. And
so the Will in the Way was originally Long Way Tavern.
Yeah.
And we loved Long Way Tavern. The food was very good. To be totally transparent, the design of the building, and this is where we learned how important it is to get that right, because I think we got almost everything else.
It was great.
Pretty
right. It was a funky layout.
Right. Food was, I loved the food there. The drinks were great. The hospitality was great. But if you remember, we had those chunky booths, and we had that dividing wall, and the bar was kind of uncomfortable. So you could never, we designed that place for people to be able to pop in unannounced. And, you know, Sylvain, you can pop in unannounced, but when it gets busy, it's hard to, it's driven by a reservation system. So we wanted a place that wasn't driven by reservations that you could just kind of roll into with a group and get really great food in a bar setting and just kind of be shocked by the quality of the food. But the way that we designed it, it was designed more like this boutique restaurant, and it just didn't feel comfortable to roll in unannounced. It felt, and so we also had problems staffing places after Ida in particular.
Yeah.
COVID was tough enough. We have a lot of the population that works in bars and restaurants in New Orleans. A lot of them are from here, but a lot of them aren't from here. They come here because they love New Orleans, or they love the music, they love the spirit of the city. And we lost probably 25 or 30% of our workforce after COVID, and we were making it work, but then after Ida, we lost another 25 or 30%. We had people who weren't from here that just evacuated and said, I love New Orleans, but I just can't afford to come back. And we just couldn't keep them all open. So Long Way Tavern was one that we had to make the choice, along with Cabin and Mobar, two other ones that we loved, so that we could make sure that Sylvain was strong and Barrel Proof was strong, and we could make sure that Chloe was strong. We planned on closing the restaurant, frankly, and that was, of all the restaurants where we applied for the restaurant relief fund, Long Way Tavern is the only one that got one. So we got some restaurant relief money, and Liam and I were like, the idea of Long Way was to be, again, kind of like Barrel Proof is for the Lower Garden District, be a living room or be a lobby for the French Quarter. You can do that at Sylvain, but it kind of feels a little less comfortable.
Right.
It's all dinner tables. It just doesn't feel like you can roll in and feel like you need a reservation. And that's not the most amenable feeling to a group of people walking in. So that idea was really important to us. So I talked to Liam once this restaurant relief money came through. We're like, we can, all the things that we learned about the physical layout, we can keep the things that we loved about Longway Tavern. Food, I think, is better than it's ever been. The drinks and that idea of rolling for a good glass or bottle of wine, or you can get a beer and a shot in the French Quarter. And then we fixed the physical space. We made it more comfortable. So now it feels a lot more like barrel proof in terms of its physical approachability. You can roll in with a group of 8 or 10, and you can find space between the courtyard. And I love that courtyard. That courtyard
is amazing.
Thank you so much. Amazing. The courtyard, to me, the courtyards are the best way to experience the French Quarter.
Yep.
We do have a courtyard at Sylvain, but it's a little tight and confined. And it feels like it's off the beaten path. But the courtyard at Will in the Way is connected to the energy from the bar.
Yeah, it's pretty welcoming. Fun. It just sort of rolls out into it, which is nice.
Yeah.
It's weird that you say that, because that wall in Longway was the one bad thing. Yeah. But it was awkward. Like, it just kind of separated the bar a little bit. It separated the flow. But the place was great. So I was really excited when Will in the Way opened, and to know that it was still you guys doing it. And the changes, you're right. Now it just sort of flows better, I guess.
Flows better. And, you know, that's where we learned about the value of an L-shaped bar. And so from here on out, we will always try to design an L-shaped bar. So we have a little bit of an L at Barrel Proof.
Right.
And there's four seats that wrap around. But at Longway, it's almost a V. So you can sit 8 or 10 people here, and then when you sit 8 or 10 people, but you can see each other. So it makes it much more cordial, and makes the camaraderie is fantastic. And so every night sort of starts with 5 or 6 random single diners or couples, and it ends up sort of being the whole bar is friends and having conversation and camaraderie. And it's because of the way that it's laid out. You can see everybody from every bar seat.
Yeah, and of course, we're focusing on the bar, but really wonderful food there. And a place you can pop in. So not as reservation-driven as, say, Sylvain, but a place you can pop in. And I like the new bar setup, because it, as someone that sometimes eats out alone, it's nice to have a bar that's a friendly setup for that. And it very much feels that way.
Yes, I appreciate that. And Tristan, so our two partners there, Josh Williams and Tristan Ferkel. Tristan was the beverage director at Sylvain, and Josh was a sous chef here at Chloe. So the food and the drinks there are outstanding. They're on par with what we do at Chloe and Sylvain, for sure. And it's not expensive, and it's super casual and fun. So what ends up happening a lot of times is people go for a drink before their dinner reservation, and we feel a little bad about this, but they'll order a couple snacks, and they'll end up digging in and then cancel their dinner reservation elsewhere. So we didn't really intend for that to happen, but it is flattering.
But it is a place where you can have a good meal. You can, you know, and you can make an evening of it. Again, I think probably like all of your places, there are certainly some tourists, but there's a lot of locals. So it draws you in, and that's not easy to do in the French Quarter particularly. You know, a lot of locals just want to stay away from the French Quarter for whatever reason. But when you go in there, you do get a sense of it's a good mix. You know, it's people making it their neighborhood place, making it their local place.
Absolutely. And we really benefited by being surrounded by so many great locally driven businesses.
It's a good location.
Toulouse Theater is right there. Yeah. Molly's is right across the street. Peychaud's with Neil Bodenheimer's right next door. Doris Metropolitan, that's a great experience. Yep. Going to get a steak at the bar there, it's one of the best dining experiences in the city. Preservation Hall's right there.
Yep.
Crew Eyewear. So it's a fun little 1 or 2 block walk.
It is.
Between that little area, you can have a fantastic night out and do 5 or 6 different things within a 2-block walk, literally.
Right. Yeah. We're totally good. So let's talk about the place that we're sitting right now. So we happen to have a really nice kind of spring day here in March. We're sitting in the front patio of the Chloe. Talk a little bit about the Chloe. Gosh, I don't even know where to start. It's a hotel. It's a restaurant. It's a place to have a drink.
Yeah. So the Chloe is fascinating. The idea behind the Chloe, it is for the neighbors who live in the neighborhood. It is their lobby. It is their place to have coffee in the morning or to have a lunch meeting. Mm-hmm. It is their place to grab a glass of wine before going to dinner elsewhere in the neighborhood. It's also their swimming pool. We want people to feel comfortable coming in and using the swimming pool, even if they're not guests of the hotel itself. But for people visiting New Orleans, it's a vantage point through which to get a sense of what it's like to live in the city of New Orleans when you stay here. Mm-hmm. And so we really want the rooms to feel like people's upscale apartment in the uptown neighborhood. And I love New Orleans. We love all neighborhoods. We just talked about the French Quarter. But I feel strongly that uptown is probably the most underrated yet culturally significant neighborhood in the city in terms of when people talk about the interesting neighborhoods in New Orleans. It's always obviously the French Quarter, rightfully so, the Marigny, the Bywater, Lower Garden District, Mid-City. People very rarely say Uptown. But when you think about what Joanne Clevenger did for all those years, and you think about Giacomo's, and you think about Cure, and you think about Tipitina's, and you think about La Petite Grocery, and you think about Lillette, and you think about all the art galleries, Alex Beard. There's tons of incredible culture, particularly 21st century culture, culture that I think harkens on New Orleans' past and its legacy around hospitality, art, and music, but is also expressing hospitality, art, and music in a truly 21st century way. Uptown's one of the most dense neighborhoods in the city for those things. And so we want people to get a sense, kind of wanted to put a flag in the ground and say, look, Uptown is relevant. It's not, you know, it's not quite as hip as the Lower Garden District, or not nearly as cool as maybe the Marigny from a traditionally defined definition of a cool neighborhood. But there's a lot of really interesting things going on here. And so by being here, it pulls people to the neighborhood, and they do sort of get a glass of wine here, and they'll go to La Petite Grocery, or they'll go to a concert at the Maple Leaf. And we're really proud of that. That's a this idea of sticking a flag in the Uptown neighborhood saying there is some really cool stuff. And again, for the travelers who come here, a lot of people come to New Orleans, as you know, they love New Orleans. They come once a year, they come twice a year, and they have their occasions, but they stay in the business district or they stay in a great hotel, but it's in a building surrounded by a bunch of other high-rise buildings. You don't really get a great sense of what it's like to live in New Orleans when you stay in those places. And so people are really excited about this idea of getting deeper into neighborhoods in these smaller places. And I think Natalie Jordy's doing a fantastic job of that with Hotel Peter and Paul. I think St. Vincent, those guys are doing that in the Lower Garden District. But people are really excited to get out into the neighborhoods to experience that wrinkle in New Orleans. And then you're only 3 miles from the party. That is the French Quarter.
It's funny you mentioned those two, because I sort of think of these three as a grouping. They all sort of want to do the same thing, obviously individual expressions and ideas, but taking old buildings and repurposing them, or old homes and repurposing them, and really planting flags in their neighborhoods. The other thing I really love about the Chloe is I think sort of one of the most authentic New Orleans experiences you can get is hearing the streetcar. So you stay at the Chloe, or you're out front having a drink or having dinner, and you hear the streetcar come right by, right across the street. I think that just, and I associate that sound with Uptown for some reason. You know, you can hear the foghorns from the river, and you can hear the streetcar rumble by. And not to mention, at Mardi Gras, you have prime seating here for Mardi Gras Day. Rex passes right out front.
It's pretty magical during Mardi Gras. And one of the other things that we were excited about with Chloe is it's essentially taking a Garden District mansion and opening it up for the world to enjoy. And so many beautiful homes on St. Charles Avenue, so many beautiful homes in the neighborhood, oak trees, incredibly manicured gardens, and they're great to look at, and they're beautiful and inspiring from the street, but it's a private residence.
Right, so you don't ever get to see it.
You never get to see it. We wanted to open up that experience to everyone who comes to New Orleans.
How many rooms does the Chloe have?
14.
14. So that's a great size. Very small, intimate, but enough that, you know, you could come stay. You could rent a couple of rooms if you got a group coming in, that kind of thing.
It's small enough. It's small enough so that you can get to know every single guest that's coming in. And after an interaction or two, they feel like it's their property.
Makes sense. Yeah. And of course, again, we're sitting out on just a gorgeous afternoon. It's a perfect day to have a drink, which we are not having. But there are plenty of people here doing that very thing.
Yes.
Perfect afternoon for it.
Yes.
So the one that I know that, well, we'll talk about one that I know really well, Barracuda, right?
Yeah.
So you guys have two locations of Barracuda, right? So
we have two in New Orleans, and we have one in Baton Rouge.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. One on Chapultepec here in the city. You have one in Algiers Point in a great location. And then you have one in Baton Rouge. So tell our listeners a little bit about what Barracuda is.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Barracuda is a taco restaurant in Margarita Garden, and it's not a typical LeBron Smith project. I wouldn't necessarily say it's even a LeBron Smith project at all, but we did support Brett Jones, who is the managing partner, the creative director. Barracuda is his idea. It's his execution. But I'm really passionate about this idea of using our experience to support other hospitality entrepreneurs to bring these projects to life. And so with Brett, we helped him with fundraising, and we helped him with some guidance on structure. And Brett and I, still, we talked this afternoon, we still support him on strategy, really support him in any way he needs us to support him. But it's not one that LeBlanc Smith actively manages, but it is one of which we're very proud, because I think Brett's done fantastic. And I think it very much speaks to this idea that we talk about is you can have incredible food and you can have incredible drinks and they don't have to be super expensive and it doesn't have to feel like there's some barrier to access or entry to anyone. And
yeah, so, no, it's great food.
Thank you.
Really, really, I was saying yesterday, well, I knocked the stuff over yesterday, my wife and I had lunch there. We do that about once a week. You think taco bar and you think kind of cheap and maybe not high quality, and it is inexpensive, but it is certainly high quality food there. And great drinks, if you want to partake in a drink, or even a limeade, if you're not drinking, is terrific there.
Thank you very much. And we were friends with Brett and Bryson, our other business partner, and Zach for a long time. But I love the way that Brett approaches the idea of food. And I think the food's delicious. I also think one of the things that's underrated about Barracuda, and again, this all is credit to Brett, is it's a substantial meal also. Mm-hmm. So it's not only is it not really expensive, but you don't have to eat.
Right.
Four tacos.
No, two tacos and some two tacos and split some queso yesterday.
Yeah, not
bad at all. And I love the spot over in Algiers Point. It was an old gas station. It's a really cool that part. If you haven't been to New Orleans, go wander around Algiers Point. But that little spot in particular is almost like a tiny town center in a way. Like, it's just a really cool spot and perfect to have a place like Barracuda.
Thank you. It's an old gas station. Yeah, and it's kind of right centrally located. But to your point, one of the magical New Orleans experiences on a beautiful spring afternoon, take the ferry over. Mm-hmm. And it's important to take the ferry because that's part of the process.
Yeah.
Take the ferry over from the French Quarter to Algiers Point, and you can knock around for an afternoon.
Easily.
Don't do anything more than one drink and one snack at each place because there's like six or eight great, great places.
Right.
But it's such a match. I'm glad you brought that up because the architecture is beautiful. You get a fantastic vantage point of the city from that perspective on the other side of the river.
But what there isn't is a ton of places to eat. There are several very good places, but there's not a ton of them, right? And
correct.
So adding Barracuda to that mix is a really good addition. There's a couple good pizza places. There's an English pub there. But there's not a ton of places right in there. So that was maybe the one criticism. But Barracuda adding to it is a good thing. So tell me about, this is the property I'm the least familiar with. Tell me about Anna's.
Yeah, so Anna's is in the old Mimi's location.
Mm-hmm.
And we were obviously reticent to like the Bridge Lounge. Mimi's was a neighborhood icon.
Yeah.
It's an institution. But, you know, Mimi's still here and still working on bars and projects. We felt like it was important for her to have her own name. We got some backlash about that. But Anna Giordano was the beverage director with us at Longway Tavern. And she was at Mobar with us before that. So it's someone we worked with for a long time. And it's a core part of our expansion strategy, our business model, is to take people who have worked really hard with us and on our behalf, who we know treat people well, who we know are willing to do the right things for the right reasons, and give them ownership of the business and give them some creative influence on what happens. And so I'm incredibly proud of Anna's, and it's a lot like Barracuda. All of that you see and all the things that people know about Anna's was Anna's creation. Liam and I help edit, and we give feedback and suggestion, and we share experiences on things that a first-time operator would probably benefit from knowing based on our experience. But for the most part, Anna's is a complete expression of Anna Giordano, who's our managing partner there. So she owns a piece of the business with us, and she had creative license to do what's become much cooler than anything Liam and I could ever do. So it worked out really well all across the board.
Well, and that's a delicate thing, like you talked about, with Mimi's being there for so long. And it seems to, after the initial kerfuffle, I will say, have settled in, and people have really come to enjoy it and see it as part of the neighborhood, which is, I think, exactly the intent there. And now it seems to be going fine.
Yeah, we learned that with Barrel Proof and with Anna's is, you know, people are upset, rightfully so, because there's an institution. Like, those places are important to the fabric of the neighborhood.
Sure.
So what's really important to us is not to do it in the exact same way or the exact same expression, but to fill the same place for people and to be that spot and to make sure that you pick right up where both Bridge Lounge and where Mimi's left off in terms of being that seminal gathering place for the neighbors, which is so crucially important.
Yeah. And you talked about Anna herself, and this is maybe a good segue into, I wanted people to get to know your businesses. And we should mention, you have a Barrel Proof in Nashville now. You're opening or working on a Chloe in Nashville.
Correct.
Are those the two you have right now going in Nashville?
Those are the two that we have going in Nashville, correct.
So even if you're not in New Orleans, I know we have listeners in Tennessee. The Barrel Proof is, again, taking the concept from New Orleans, putting it in Nashville, so check that out. But I wanted to get to, besides exposing to people to your businesses, one of the things that really impresses me, Robert, is the way that you guys build up your staff and incorporate them and really make them a part of the business, and in some cases even part equity interest in the building, in the business. So can you talk a little bit about your philosophy with that and how that came to be?
Yeah, so, you know, it kind of starts with, I don't want to be too shilly or pitchy, but I think it starts with kind of sharing the vision and the values of the company. So, mm-hmm. you know, LeBlanc Smith creates excellent 21st century Southern hospitality experiences to enable all people to live joyful, balanced, and fulfilling lives and to develop great leaders. And when we talk about all people, we literally talk about all people in terms of different belief systems and things, but we really talk about our guests and our team members in equal measure. And so when we defined our values and our vision for the company, we wanted to make sure that each of them applied to our guests and our team in equal measure. Mm. And so the five values are: I see you, I love you, be inspiring, do cool shit and stay humble, teach why, and create contagious joy. And we very much want to achieve those five things for the people with whom we work, just as we do for the guests that we're fortunate enough to entertain. And so we use those values to define how we interact with our team members. And so this idea of I see you, I love you, it means that everybody matters, everybody counts, even if it's your first day or your first week and someone else has been here for three years. The person who's been here for 3 years has more experience, but they're no more important than the person who's been here for a week. Mm-hmm. And the chef may have some more responsibility than the porter or the busser, but if the porter or the busser doesn't show up, the whole thing falls down the same way that it falls down if the chef doesn't show up. And so this idea of I see you, I love you, everybody counts. Being inspiring, we have a platform to teach and to share things with each other. We have the platform to be able to touch people. It's similar to the way that a musician or a writer or a filmmaker can move people. We create products and experiences that can move people, so we should take that seriously. Do cool shit and stay humble. We define cool very differently than it's defined in modern vernacular. What we define cool as: be comfortable in your own skin. Mm. To us, that's the universal definition of cool. And so we want our team members to feel uniquely authentic to themselves. We have certain ways that we present mm-hmm. dishes. We make the margarita in the old fashioned the same way, but how we express ourselves should be very unique to who you are. Number four, teach why. From the standpoint of what you mentioned in terms of developing people, that's probably the most important thing. I think a lot of times companies spend a lot of time teaching people what to do and how to do it. They don't take the extra 10 or 15 seconds that it takes to teach why we do it. And when you start teaching why, it creates a culture of learning and understanding that becomes self-perpetuating. If you understand not just what to do and how to do it, but also why we do it, then you can teach people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's that idea: if you give a person a fish, they eat for a day. Sure. If you teach a person a fish, they eat for eternity. And then create contagious joy. And just like anxiety, stress, sorrow, laughter and joy is equally infectious. And so you choose on to how you want people to feel that work with us. And so that's the framework that we use. And it's important to us that the people that work with us understand that we value each and every one of them very much. We are very clear that Chloe is awesome, not because of me. Chloe's awesome because of the team that's here. Anna's mm-hmm. is awesome. You know, we just went through all the places. And so it's important to us that we are expressive. We try to do a good job. I think a lot of times at restaurant leadership and bar leadership in particular, if you ask a manager what they do, they'll tell you their job is to put out fires. Mm-hmm. We don't think about it that way at all. You know, if you ask a leader what they do in our company, the answer should be we set a good example for our team members and create warm, engaging, and fun experiences for our guests and create training development opportunities and give our team the support and the resource they need to be successful. And what we should be doing is spending more time pointing out the things that are going well, because you achieve excellence much more readily by pointing out the things that people are doing well and thanking them for good behaviors. So then they just, again, perpetuate mm-hmm. and other people mm-hmm. see that and they model good behaviors than you ever will by just pointing out the things that aren't going wrong. You know, sure. Nobody wants that race to the bottom. And so that dynamic on how we interact with people, you know, the other thing that we talk about in our company, and it was in the vision statement, is we talk about excellence and not perfection in mm-hmm. hospitality. And so I think, you know, a lot of times you see the master chef or the master sommelier, it's all about perfection. And the reality of it is, I think that's probably the most damaging thing. Right up there with like fiscal irresponsibility, the most mm-hmm. damaging thing to the psychology of people who work in bars and restaurants is this idea of perfection. Perfection is impossible, as we mm-hmm. both know. And the problem with perfection is, in the quest to be perfect, people are indecisive. They second guess themselves. You create a ton of doubt, stress, and anxiety. When they do make a mistake, which is inherently human, they feel like a failure. And so it creates additional stress and anxiety. Whereas when you allow for excellence, that allows for mistakes. Like, you can mm-hmm. make mistakes. Let's not make mistakes because we're being lazy. Let's not make mistakes because we don't care. Mm-hmm. But if you make a bold choice do you try something on a cocktail, or if you make a recommendation to a guest of a wine they don't end up liking, you made that choice, and nobody's gonna, your head doesn't roll when you make a mistake. All that we ask you to do is take responsibility for it and make sure that you teach us what you learned from it and make it up to whoever might have been put out by the mistake, the team member or the, and I'm also, as leaders, we expect our leaders to do is, like, when we make mistakes, even if people don't see it, mm-hmm. call it out, share it with people, mm-hmm. so that they know that you're human as well, and they can also learn from your mistakes. And so when you create that environment, it gives a context of people, they trust you and they give you the benefit of the doubt. And once you have that relationship, then you can really share that information, that teach why moment, mm-hmm. to help people advance not just their hospitality careers, but whatever they'd like to do in the next step in life.
Sure, it makes sense.
We have this commitment. We tell people on the first day, it's, you know, it's our obligation to make sure this is a really fulfilling experience for you. We understand it's a job and you need a paycheck to pay rent and to live life, but we want it to be so much more than that. We'd love for this to be an experience 3-5 years down the line. When you look back on it, finally, you say, it wasn't just fun and entertaining, but I learned a tremendous amount about wine and food culture. I learned about marketing and branding. I learned about strategy. You know, we learned about how to financially manage things. We learned how to set budgets. And so we try to open source all that teaching, everything that we're thinking about or doing. We try to share that with the team, mm-hmm. really, really transparently.
And I think it comes through in the customer experience. You know, just my engagement at the various properties, the engagement is almost uniformly outstanding. And in my sense, knowing a little bit about your story as I did, I think that it comes through all those things that you're talking about, the culture and the values. People are living that, at least as one customer, I can tell you that I see that people are exhibiting those values in the engagements because they're uniformly good. Even if you're in Barrel Proof during Christmas and it's slammed and the bartenders are overwhelmed, they still seem to take that time to personally stop and try to make the experience the best they can for you. Same thing at Barracuda. If you go in the middle of lunch and they're busy, there's just a different feeling there, I would say, than you get at some other places. And I also know you guys kind of doubled down coming off of Ida. You had to make some really difficult decisions about businesses opening and closing. You lost, like everyone did, lost staffing, but you really doubled down on that commitment to your employees.
Yeah, I mean, it was important. And I think, you know, it was a time we all needed people to say, I see you, I love you, I believe mm-hmm. in you, I'm behind you. And so we moved everybody to salary for however long they were evacuated. We put everybody on a $40,000 salary, even though nobody was working, because it's expensive. You know, it's mm-hmm. like it's tremendously expensive to evacuate and stay in a hotel yeah. for 2 weeks. There was no power or whatever. And to worry about not only whether you have a job or not, but if you make most of your money on tips or during, mm-hmm. you know, hourly compensation, it just didn't seem right and didn't seem fair. So we moved everybody to salary for those 3 or 4 weeks. It was an investment and it was expensive and it hurt, but it was the right thing to do. And I think I appreciate you saying how you feel and how they treat you. But I think if you treat the people that you work with and the people who really make sure that, you know, the people upon whose word you really live, the people doing the work, then I think they'll do the same with you and they'll do the same with the guests. And I appreciate you sharing that, but
I'm proud of it. It's not accidental that we frequent LeBlanc and Smith properties because they're consistent too. That's the other thing. Each one's a different experience, but there's a consistency underlying it, obviously, that comes through. Look, I appreciate it. I know you're busy. I appreciate the time. I love the properties, but I also love what you're doing and how you're doing it. And I wanted to share it with our thousands of listeners so that they get an opportunity the next time they're in New Orleans. Or I always try to put something for my mom, who's a local mom. I've just named several places.
That's awesome.
You should go check out. You and Dad should come to the Chloe. That would be my recommendation, or Barracuda's. They're not much on the bourbon drinking, so probably not Barrel Proof. But I like my listeners to find places that are well-run and not only are outstanding places, but that have a good story behind them. And you certainly do. And I'm happy for you, but thankful for you to take the time to share the story with us today, Robert.
Thank you very much.
All right.
I appreciate it, Mark.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes to all the places so that people can check them out. If you're loving the show, please subscribe, and I'm going to turn it over to my daughters to close us out. Thanks, y'all.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.